bells and whistles anyhow. She took it to the cashier. "Have you got any blank cassette tapes by any chance?" "I've got a boxful somewhere," the cashier replied. "I'm also dying to get rid of our story cassettes. The library donated a whole Enid Blyton Famous Five series years ago, but I haven't had the heart to throw them out. We have to clear out some storage room in the back now, and if I don't find them a home..."
"I could take some," Nicky said. She couldn't bear the thought of those tapes being thrown out either. Mum used to borrow them from the library when she was too little to read, so she could follow along with Mindy. The cashier disappeared into the back room. While she was away, Nicky browsed the shelves. She came across the Beatrix Potter book again and flipped through it.
"You don't happen to have more books about Beatrix Potter, do you?" Nicky called. "Everything we've got is on the shelves," the cashier said, emerging into view again. "Which book are you looking for?"
"It's not one of her stories, actually. It's a collection of her early sketches and journal entries. It's very hard to find, because it's a collection of glossy pictures of the actual extracts rather than typed-up pages. I saw it a few years ago in a bookshop but didn't buy it."
"I hate it when that happens, book regret. You come across something and think, I don't want that, and later you're obsessed with getting it and it's no longer available."
Nicky's regret was bigger than that.
"Betty, what is this? A picture book?"
Dad had asked, when he noticed her browsing it in a bookshop in Delhi.
"It's your exam year. These are cartoons."
With no rupees of her own, Nicky was unable to purchase it herself.
"It's not a picture book," she'd said in frustration. "They're Beatrix Potter's journals."
This meant little to Dad. Nicky had been sullen and resentful for the rest of the trip. The cashier looked up curiously at Nicky.
"Any particular reason you're buying a tape recorder in the 21st century?"
"I'm teaching English to some older women," Nicky replied. "I don't have much of a budget for learning aids, and we're recording conversations and improving accents." This was the line she had practiced in case Kulwinda asked about it. She planned on staging a few recorded conversations with the students as a decoy. The cashier handed her a box filled with Famous Five story tapes.
"Pick whichever you want," she smiled. "This one's my favourite."
It was the story of a secret passageway. Only a few sentences, but Nicky was instantly transported to her childhood, when Mum would play these tapes at night, rarely saying anything as Mindy followed the words on the page with her finger, and Nicky sat captivated by the ebb and flow of the narrator's voice. Despite her elite education in India, Mum must have lost confidence in her pronunciation once she arrived in England. Nicky thought of Dharampal Kaur with a rush of guilt. The woman just wanted to learn English, and Nicky had all but ignored her yesterday when she stormed out in a rage.
"How much are they?"
"They're only 10 pence each."
Nicky glanced at the box. It was hard to resist.
"I'll take them all then."
She paid for the tape recorder as well and walked out into the downpour, hugging her purchases close to her chest. After zipping up her suitcase, Kulwinda stacked her papers and passport neatly together and put them in a pouch. She shut her eyes, pulled her dupatta over her head, and asked Guru Nanak to bless her with a safe journey. A creaking noise downstairs made her eyes fly open. Kulwinda had to fight the panic that rose into her throat. It was just Sarab, she assured herself. He was home early from his shift. Her heartbeat resumed its normal pace as she named each sound of his arrival. There he was, padding about the kitchen, the back door hinges squeaking as he stepped out to the second freezer in their garage, where she had stored meals for each night of her absence. She opened her eyes and called out his name. There were some fresh rotis and a pot of tea on the table for lunch, but he hadn't seen it. Making her way to the top of the stairs to call his name again, she realised that he thought she was already gone. Kulwinda deliberately stepped on a loose board. The stair groaned loudly in protest.
"I'm here,"
she said when she reached the foyer. Sarab was in the living room watching television.
"Oh," he said. "What time is your flight?"
4:30, she said. "I need to be there 2 hours before.
3 hours is preferred, but I think 2 hours is just fine. The less time running into Punjabis at Heathrow, the better.
We'll leave at 2, Saurabh said.
Kulwinder wasn't sure if she imagined the resentment in his voice. They'd quarrelled again yesterday about her trip. He'd demanded to know why she was still going.
We go every year, she reminded him.
There were relatives to visit, weddings to attend. Of course, they'd understand if she missed a year, but her life in London had changed enough lately. India would be the same, as if she had never left it, and more than ever, she craved the noise and chaos of her less complicated past. She wanted to breathe in the gritty air and elbow her way through bustling markets. Saurabh's refusal to go to India was deeply disappointing. It widened the chasm between them that grief had created. Kulwinder didn't understand why he preferred to cope with loss in stillness. She would travel the entire world if it would help her escape.
What are you watching? Kulwinder asked.
Saurabh was never unkind, just detached. An expression of mild irritation rippled across his features.
Just a television show, he replied.
Kulwinder retreated to her bedroom and drew a chair to the windowsill, watching the pavement below. Out of habit, she turned her head at an angle to keep Turunpal's house in the furthest corner of her vision, so it was just a pesky blur. A pair of grandmothers wearing woolly cardigans over their shalwar kameezes dragged overflowing trolleys back from the market. Crossing their paths, a couple and their 3 small children formed a single file line to let them pass. There were polite thanking nods between both parties. One of the old women reached out to stroke a child's face, and when the child turned up her face and smiled, an acute pain punctured Kulwinder's heart. Did Saurabh experience Maya's loss in these same little ways? She couldn't ask. Across the road, a young woman came into Kulwinder's view. She squinted and pressed her nose against the window. That hurried walk was unmistakably Nikki's. What was she doing here? Nikki's satchel bounced against her hip as she traipsed across the road. She was carrying a carton. Kulwinder craned her neck and saw Nikki ring the doorbell at number 18. The door opened and Mrs. Shah appeared. What did Nikki want from Mrs. Shah? They spoke for a few moments and then Mrs. Shah pointed to the house next door before retreating back into her home. Number 16. Nikki had come to visit Turunpal. Kulwinder took in a breath and let her gaze follow Nikki to Turunpal's doorstep. Her heartbeat accelerated. It was always like this when she came face to face with that walkway, that door. For weeks after Maya died, Kulwinder was haunted by visions of her walking in and never coming out. Nikki rang the doorbell and waited. A few moments later, she placed the carton on the ground and knocked on the door. Kulwinder continued to watch as Nikki drew a notebook and pen from her bag and scrawled a note that she tucked into the carton. Reluctantly, she stepped off the porch, turning back a few times to see if Turunpal had materialized. Kulwinder waited until Nikki was completely out of view, and then she hurried down the stairs.
"Just going next door to say goodbye to the neighbors," she called over her shoulder.
Just as she was about to cross the road, Kulwinder stopped. What was she doing? She was curious to see what Nikki had left on the doorstep, but was it worth the visit? Turunpal's house drew and repelled her in equal measure, keeping her on the pavement, switching her feet in a reluctant dance.
"It's for your classes," she convinced herself.
There was something shifty about Nikki, and she needed to find out what it was before her classes were affected. She scrambled across the road, looking to her left and right for cars and nosy neighbours. The last thing she needed was somebody spotting her rooting through Turunpal's belongings on her doorstep. Nikki's carton was not properly sealed because there were cassette tapes bulging out of the top, pushing through the flaps. Enid Blyton and Famous 5 tapes. Kulwinder plucked the note from the carton. It was written hastily and the Gurmukhi spelling was all wrong, but Kulwinder got the gist of it. "To Turunpal's daughter, please read this note to her. It is from Nikki. I'm very sorry about last lesson. Here are some story tapes so you can return to learning English. Return to learning English? What exactly was going on in that class? Corwinda replaced the note and hurried back to her house. Her heartbeat thrashed in her ears. She took out her phone and searched for Nikki's number. It was a good thing she'd thought to save it that night, so she could call Nikki to reprimand her if she left the community building lights on again. Corwinda waited for her hands to stop shaking, and then she typed a message. Hello, Nikki. Letting you know that I will be in India longer than expected, returning 30th March. Any issues, please contact Sikh Community Association offices. She pressed send. Her return was actually scheduled for 27th of March. That gave her 3 days to make a surprise drop-in on the classes to find out what Nikki and the women were up to. Moments later, she received a reply from Nikki. Okay, have a good trip. Let's play a game, Manjeet suggested when Nikki entered the classroom. Nikki wasn't listening. She was distracted by the sight of 4 elderly white-clad women wandering the halls. Does anyone know who these ladies are? Nikki asked. The women floated past the window. One pressed her wrinkly face against the panel and then pulled away. They're some friends of mine. They want to join in as well, Arvinda said. So why don't they come in? Nikki asked. They will. But they're staring at us, Nikki said. A pair of eyes at the window met hers and then disappeared. Let them make their own way, Arvinda said. They've never been in a classroom before. The thought of telling these stories is very daunting. We've told them there's nothing to worry about, Preetam said. They're just a bit afraid of you. You're too modern for them, Arvinda explained. Too modern? You're wearing jeans. You always wear jeans, said Preetam. And everybody can see your bright pink bra because of the wide neck of that sweater. It's off-shoulder, Sheena said in Nikki's defense. That's the fashion. Fashion is fine for you young girls, and we don't have a problem with it. But to these ultra-conservative ladies, you're an alien, Arvinda said. You might as well be English, Preetam said. This is ridiculous, Nikki said. It's like we're in a zoo enclosure. The women outside were taking turns to peer at her now. One scanned her from head to toe and then whispered to her friend. Excuse me, Nikki, what is enclosure? Manjeet asked. Like a cage, Nikki said. Sometimes you mix the English words with the Punjabi words, Manjeet said. That's also a problem for you all? Nikki asked. Manjeet nodded very apologetically. And you're not married, Preetam blurted out. How are these women supposed to talk someone about these intimate things when she's not supposed to have experienced them? Are you getting married, Nikki? Asked Manjeet. Are you looking? You shouldn't wait too long. When I decide to get married, Bibi Manjeet, you'll be the first to know, Nikki replied. Don't do that, Arvinda said with a frown. Tell your family first. That's it, Nikki said. She marched to the door and opened it against the class's rising protests. She gave the women her brightest smile and brought her palms together. Good evening, she said. Sat Sri Akal. The women drew together and stared at Nikki. Welcome to the class, she continued. Come on in. The air between them was still. Nikki's smile began to hurt. Please, she said. As the ladies began to retreat, Arvinda came rushing out the door. She apologized to the women as they disappeared down the stairs in a slow, hunched-backed procession. Arvinda gripped Nikki by the shoulders and steered her back into the class. But where are they going? Nikki asked. You scared them. They weren't ready for this. Well, when they come back, I'll apologize and start over. It's just... They won't come back, Arvinda snapped. Her stare was like a hot white light. We are not all the same, Nikki, she said. There are some very reserved people in this community.
I know that, but I just...
You don't know, Arvinda said. Our little group are the only widows to sign up for writing classes. That may seem like nothing to you, but for some it is a very brave and frightening thing. Those women are shy and scared. They get no attention from their husbands.
Not the kind they wanted anyway.
Oh, Mother, please, Greetham said.
Arvinda turned to face her. Please what?
Nikki, these women come from a very traditional village, that's all. And you, Preetam said, nodding to Arvinda, you always make it sound like you had a terrible husband. I don't remember Papa being half as bad as you make him sound.
You wouldn't know anything about my private life with your father.
But that night before my wedding, when you gave me all of that advice, your cheeks were shimmering. You were like a new bride yourself. Don't tell me it all came from your imagination. You knew what passion was. He had to have shown it to you at some point.
Arvinda's lower lip quivered. Nikki noticed her biting it, either to stop from laughing or saying something. Either way, she knew she had to put an end to the conversation. She pulled the tape recorder out of her bag and laid it on the table.
I bought us a tape recorder so Sheena doesn't have to transcribe and you can all tell your stories without having to pause.
She busied herself with plugging it in and feeding it a new tape.
Shall we test it? She asked brightly, pressing the record button. Somebody say something. Hello, Manjeet said, giving the tape recorder a wave.
Nikki turned it off, rewound it and played their recording. Their voices came through clearly. The silence from the other women was captured as well.
Could you give me the tapes at the end of each lesson? Sheena asked. I play them at home and transcribe the stories.
You still want written versions of the stories? Nikki asked.
If it's not too much trouble for Sheena, Manjeet spoke up. I like that what I imagine gets put onto paper.
Me too, Arvinda agreed, shrugging off her huff. I can't read the words, but I can see them. It will be my only chance to see my words in print, even if I can't read it myself.
The class registration forms were still in Nikki's bag from her visit to Dharampal's house earlier. Somebody, one of Dharampal's children, she assumed, had printed her name, address and telephone number in block letters, and hers was not the only form that looked rushed by another's hand. Did these ladies look at those words and feel a sense of pride that they represented them as a person? Or was there shame at being unable to decipher the alphabet?
What's your game, Manjeet? Nikki asked, recalling Manjeet's exclamation as she had entered the classroom.
Manjeet looked very pleased.
Let's each come up with a story for these pictures.
She produced a magazine from her bag. On the front cover, a naked woman lay on her back, her full breasts glowing in the natural light that poured through an open window.
Is that an old playboy?
Nikki asked, feeling her eyes bug out slightly.
Confiscated from my son 30 years ago. I buried the magazine in a trunk because I was afraid that the neighbours might see it in the rubbish. I came across it this morning while sorting through all of our old things.
Playboy from the '80s. The women had big hair and the photographs were tinted in sepia, giving the images an instantly nostalgic look. Some of the men had trim moustaches. The women passed the magazine around and flipped through the pages. Arvinda held up a centrefold of a model sitting naked on the bonnet of a sports car. Her bronze skin glowed against the car's red finish.
This woman is waiting in the garage to surprise her lover. He's a mechanic. He spends the whole day tuning people's cars, and when he returns, he's ready to be tuned up himself, Sheena offered. Only problem is, she's getting sick of waiting. Plus, when he comes back, he has to shower to get all the grime and sweat off him so he can smell nice for her, Manjeet said. So she decides to put her clothes back on and go for a drive around the neighborhood. The first handsome man she sees, she'll find him and take him back to her house, Preetam said.
The magazine was still in Arvinda's hands. She flipped to another page.
This man, she said, pointing to a picture of a muscular, tanned man. The women murmured their approval.
Nikki said nothing else as the story was passed from woman to woman taking shape. Eventually, there was a pause between lines.
I think we're done, Sheena said. But they've only been using their hands, Manjeet protested.
What of it? Arvinda asked. They're both very satisfied. Besides, let us save the real thing for her lover. She's still going to go to bed with him tonight.
True. By the time she's finished with this man, it's evening and her lover is returning. Won't you be able to tell that she's been with another man? She can take a shower, Sheena said.
Then she'll be too clean.
It's suspicious, Arvinda said.
Too clean? Preetham asked. What man would be bothered by that? I always showered right before my husband came home.
She can spray on some perfume then, Sheena suggested.
Arvinda shook her head. Her voice rose with certainty.
Here's what she does, huh? She takes a shower and then walks out the door. She passes the old village well and mingles with other housewives at the small market. She finds some extra errands to do, paying the chaiwala in advance for a week's worth of afternoon tea, bringing water to the farm hands. That's about as much activity as she'd have done throughout the day. Her skin glows with a light sweat, but she's not dirty. That's how she covers it up.
When she was finished, she was out of breath, exhilarated, triumphant. She had revealed much more than she had said, and the force of the confession seemed to knock her windless. The women stared at her. Preetham in particular looked horrified.
Those were all places near our home in Punjab, Preetham finally said.
Replace them with shops in this Gori's life then, Arvinda said. Nikki, tell us, what's within walking distance of your place?
A pub, Nikki said.
There, Arvinda said. Add that, Sheena.
Who was it?
Preetham asked quietly.
When?
Arvinda sucked in her breath and said nothing.
Who was it? Preetham cried. There is no need to raise your voice at me, Preetham, Arvinda said. I am still your elder.
You've just admitted to doing the most dishonorable thing, Preetham said. Who were you cheating on my father with? Did you wreck another family?
Preetham looked around wildly. This was the role of a lifetime for her, Nikki realized. All of her angst and theatrics finally had an outlet.
Who was it?
The other women shrank back into their seats, their eyes intently darting back and forth between mother and daughter. Nikki was reminded of her first impression of these two women. Their resemblance had been so obvious that she'd mistaken them for sisters. But this conflict illuminated their differences. The sleeves of Arvinda's white tunic hung loosely at her bony wrists, and the hems had greyed slightly, while Preetham's widow attire was a classier affair. Lacy trim on a cream dupatta. While Preetham's eyes were bright with rage, Arvinda's stare was distant and watery, her whole body heaving in the aftermath of her revelation. Preetham fanned her face with her hands.
Nikki, I might faint.
That's not necessary, Preetham, Sheena said.
Sheena, don't get involved, Manjeet said quietly. Did you think about our family? Preetham asked. About what you would have had to do if Papa found out? It's still happening, you know. Look at how Maya ended up.
That's enough, Arvinda snapped.
Preetham burst into tears and bolted from the room.
I think it's time for a break. 10 minutes and then we'll meet back here, Nikki announced.
The women filed out silently. Nikki sat back in her chair. Her head throbbed from this whirlwind of revelations, the most confusing of which was the mention of Maya. How did she end up? The hints about her death, about being caught with texts on her phone. There was nobody to ask, no appropriate moment to do so. From the window, she could see them emerging from the building and walking towards the temple. Sheena and Manjeet walked together, giving space to Arvinda, who lingered behind them. She stood under the temple's awning and stared off into the distance, at the cars lined up in the car park. Nikki contemplated approaching Arvinda, but she was wary of prying after her misstep with the old women earlier. Arvinda stepped into a puddle of warm light, which gave her white garments a soft, yellowish appearance. She wasn't a widow any more, but a lithe young woman, hungering for affection.
A navy sweater stretched across Jason's shoulders to show off his physique.
As they waited in line outside the art house cinema, Nicky couldn't help stealing glimpses at him. A shaving cut on his jawbone looked recent. She wondered if he had taken as long as she had to get ready. She'd bought mascara, lipstick, eyeshadow, and a new foundation from Boots after an eager sales girl convinced her to let her do a mini makeover. She chided herself all the way home for acquiring these things that she usually railed against. Makeup was oppressive. It created an ideal of women, didn't it? But when she caught her reflection in a shop window, she discovered a version of herself with fuller lips and bolder eyes, and she liked it. By the time they got to the front of the line, tickets for every film were sold out, except for a French movie.
"This one got good reviews," Nicky said. "It starts in an hour and a half, though. Shall we take a walk and find a place to eat?"
Jason nodded. "Ever been to Paris?" he asked Nicky as they strolled down the street.
"Once," she said, "with a lover."
She'd meant to sound mysterious, but it came out like a title for an erotic story. "Once with a lover," she giggled. "That good, huh?" Jason asked.
"No, awful, actually. I met this French film student at a party last year. I got some cheap Eurostar tickets and went away to Paris for 4 days. It was meant to be romantic."
"But it wasn't.
We were both broke. He was out most of the day working. Not on his art, mind you. He was working in McDonald's. I spent most of the day sitting in his flat watching television."
"You didn't go out? Take in the City of Lights?"
"He kept promising that we'd do that together when he came home. The flat was in a very unsafe area and my French is hopeless, so I was happy to wait. But each night he came back, brooding and tired. It went downhill quite quickly."
"That's too bad," Jason said.
"And you," Nicky asked, "been to Paris?"
Jason shook his head. "I went to Greece and Spain with my ex. It was all the travel she was interested in doing. I never got to Paris."
A shift in his voice caught Nicky's attention. When he noticed her peering at him, he changed the subject.
"There's a place which does delicious gourmet pizzas up that way."
As they headed in the direction of the restaurant, they passed a bookshop called Sally's, and something stirred in the back of Nicky's mind. "Do you mind if we duck in? I want to check if I have something," Nicky said.
"No problem," Jason said.
As soon as they entered, he made a beeline for a section at the back. Nicky approached the counter and inquired about the journals and sketches of Beatrix Potter. The clerk looked it up on her system and said, "It's out of print. Have you looked for used copies online?"
"I have," Nicky said. And she had found two, but they were in very poor condition, the spines threadbare and the pages dog-eared. One copy appeared water-damaged, with wrinkly, bloated pages as if somebody had dropped it into the bath. She thanked the clerk and searched for Jason. He was in a section marked Eastern Philosophy. She gave him a wave and headed to the anthology section. Scanning the titles, Nicky couldn't help hearing the voices of her Southall storytellers, urgent and rhythmic as they wove their sensual tales. She went to join Jason.
"What were you looking for?" he asked.
Nicky told him about the Beatrix Potter book.
It was in this little bookshop in Delhi, which was crammed from floor to ceiling in textbooks and novels. You could spend a whole day there," she said.
"You don't remember the name of the shop?"
"No, just that it was on Connaught Place, sort of wedged behind a boutique in one of those restored colonial buildings."
"Amongst at least 10 other bookshops of the same description," Jason said with a smile. "I know people go to Connaught Place to escape the mayhem of Delhi, but I'm drawn to the pushcarts and makeshift stalls that find their way in somehow."
"Exactly. The more I think of it, the more I want that very copy, not something new. I still remember it had a tea stain on the cover in the shape of a leaf.
My dad had looked at it and said, 'This book isn't even new.' That just made me angrier.
Here I was, so excited about the contents of the book, and all he could see was a superficial mark on the cover." They went to the cashier together, where Jason purchased a book called Japanese Philosophy.
"This completes my set," he explained to Nicky as the cashier rang up his purchase. "I've got all the books in this series, Chinese, Indian, Western, and Islamic. Oh, and Sikh, of course.
but I've got another entire shelf for Sikh philosophy books.
Nerd, Nikki thought with a twinge of delight. Are your parents religious? Nikki asked.
Nah, not really. Traditional, but not religious. That's what prompted me to study Sikhism in the first place. It seemed like there were so many rules they kept imposing that had no basis in religion. I started reading the scripture to be able to argue with them.
I'm sure they love that, Nikki said.
They sure did, Jason grinned. My parents grudgingly admit to learning a few new things now and then, but it's hard work.
Yours, traditional?
My mum has always been a bit more traditional than Dad. Dad was quite supportive of me. Mum seemed to think that she had to rein me in all the time. It was hard when Dad died.
You guys were close, Jason asked, and then he hastily added, sorry, that's a stupid question. I hated people asking me that when my mother was sick, as if our closeness mattered. She's family, whether we're close or not isn't really the point.
It's okay, Nikki said, and yes, we were. He was very encouraging of me, but before he died we'd had this massive argument. I dropped out of law school, he was furious. I'd never seen him so upset before. We didn't speak, and then he went to India with Mum to get away from it all, and he died there.
Nikki said it all so matter-of-factly, but when she was finished, she felt the tears boiling in her chest. She panicked. Was she really going to cry over Dad for the first time now, while on a first date?
Sorry, she choked.
Hey, Jason said. Up ahead, there was a small park with an iron bench facing the road. He gestured to it and Nikki nodded. She was grateful that her face was obscured by shadows as they sat down. The pressure of tears subsided.
It's hard because it was so sudden that I'll never know if he came to terms with what I did or not. My mum gets really antsy when I try to ask her what his last conscious moments were like, so I imagine he was still upset with me. I don't know which feeling is worse, guilt or grief, or which one I'm supposed to feel.
Grief, I suppose, Jason said. There's little use in feeling guilty.
But if I hadn't dropped out...
You can't do that to yourself, Jason said. I get it. My parents would have freaked out if I'd switched out of engineering. Luckily for them, I actually like it, but you can't sentence yourself to all of this torment over what might have happened if you decided to stay in law school. It's likely that you'd be miserable.
Nikki took in a breath and felt it come easily. Jason's assurances were not new. Olive had given her a similar talk after Dad's death, but Jason was the first Punjabi person to attempt to convince Nikki that she had made the right decision. Only now did it occur to her that she was expecting him to repeat Mindy's concerns. What about duty? Instead, all she saw on his face was understanding.
Thanks, she said. No problem. We've all had to come to terms with letting our parents down.
You can't have been too troublesome being a firstborn male and an engineer, Nikki teased. It might have been a trick of passing headlights, but she noticed a stricken look crossing Jason's face. He laughed, but it was a beat too late. Nikki was curious, but she felt it was too soon to pry.
I was kidding, she added. I know, Jason said. There's a lot of pressure to succeed, though. I had to tick all of the success boxes right from the very start. Makes me think of banana chips.
Nikki stared at him.
You've lost me.
See, when I was in preschool, my parents discovered that I was left-handed. They had a meltdown. My dad sat me down every night to train me to write with my right hand. I hated those sessions. But there was one way to motivate me. Dad bribed me with a dried banana chip for each line of the alphabet I traced out with my right hand. I loved those things. It was a couple of years before I discovered real junk food, of course.
What was so bad about being left-handed?
Jason pulled a serious face. I was starting out life with a devastating disadvantage, Nicky. I would never be able to use scissors properly. Tying shoelaces would be complicated, and worst of all, my work would be untidy. Dad had a left-handed cousin in India who was always punished by teachers for leaving pen smudges on his assignments.
A couple of banana chips and you were converted. You wouldn't hold up well as a spy.
I stuck to my guns and I remained left-handed. I got told off every time I came home from grade school with smudged ink on my left hand. My mother had this complex about being an immigrant. She thought people would think we weren't clean. She used to scrub my hands each day with grainy blue laundry soap, but she couldn't change who I naturally was.
What a rebel, Nicky teased.
Jason grinned. All I'm saying is that I've always been aware of the pressure to follow the rules and meet expectations. The eldest child is meant to pave the way. If I fail at anything, my siblings are doomed, according to my parents.
Sometimes I think that's why my sister is making such a project out of finding a husband, Nicky said. She wants to set things right, hoping that I'll take her lead.
You'll be posting your particulars on the marriage board, then?
Never.
Good. It's bad enough that you picked me up at the temple.
I did not pick you up, Nicky retorted, giving Jason a thump on the arm.
He laughed and stood up.
Come on, let's get some dinner, he said.
He reached out his hands, palms up, inviting Nicky to place her hands in them, and then he pulled her up. She teetered forwards and nearly fell right back onto the bench if not for his arms, suddenly bracing her waist. They kissed then. The street around them dissolved into a peaceful silence, which lingered even after they gently drew away from each other and began walking wordlessly towards the restaurant.
At dinner, Jason asked Nicky how her job at the temple was going.
Good, Nicky said, sawing a knife through her margarita pizza. She took a bite and looked up to see Jason staring expectantly at her.
There's not much to say about it, really, she shrugged. I'm just teaching old ladies to read and write.
It sounds very rewarding.
It is, Nicky said.
She could hear above the restaurant's din of voices and cutlery clashing, the women's audible sighs after a particularly steamy story had been read out.
Is it something you've always wanted to do?
Sure, Nicky said, and now she couldn't help breaking out into a smile.
I've always wanted to do some sort of community service, and this involves writing, so it combines my two passions.
The word passion made her giggle.
Look at you, so excited about what you do. It's great, Jason said.
Your mom and sister must be proud at the very least that you're helping women in the community.
An image flashed into Nicky's mind. Mum and Mindy sitting in the back of Nicky's classroom, pencils poised primly over their notebooks, and confusion descending over their faces when the women started describing sex scenes with vegetables. She burst out laughing. It was a sort of uncontrollable gasping laughter that made her belly ache. She shook her head and shut her eyes, shaking with laughter, and when she opened them, Jason was peering curiously at her.
Oh, my goodness, Nicky said. I'm sorry. Tears streamed down her face.
I have to tell you, don't I?
Tell me what?
I'm not a teacher.
What do you do then?
I'm running an erotic storytelling workshop for Punjabi widows.
Jason blinked. What do you mean?
Exactly that. Twice a week, we meet in the Temple Community Centre on the pretense of learning English, but the women come up with these sexual stories instead.
You're kidding, Jason said. You have to be.
Nicky took a sip of her wine with a flourish, pleased at the widening smile on Jason's face.
No kidding, she said. We all pitch in with feedback and suggestions to make the story more convincing. Sometimes one story takes up a whole lesson.
The frown on Jason's face worried Nicky a little. Maybe she shouldn't have said anything.
What's wrong with my amazing job? She asked lightly.
Nothing's wrong. I'm just struggling to believe this,
Jason said. She felt her pulse throbbing in the sweet secret spot between her thighs, Nikki said. A widow wrote that. Jason shook his head slowly, a curious smile appearing. So, how did this come about? Nikki found herself at the very beginning, telling Jason about how she'd been fooled into thinking she'd be teaching a literacy class. His growing smile made her slightly light-headed. Are these proper widows, like my grandmother? I don't know. Does your grandmother harbour any fantasies of kneading dough for your grandfather's roti with her bare bottom? Because that's a story we did recently. It had been Arvinda's idea. Both members of the couple had been aroused by this act, the half-naked woman grinding her bum over the gooey raw dough, and the man eating the roti later, which he claimed was velvety soft because of this secret method. I can't imagine her being savvy enough to come up with a scene like that. Not to you, maybe, but I'll bet she talks about these things with her friends. You'll bet my sweet, innocent Nanny G talks dirty with her prayer group. Nikki smiled. A month ago, I would have thought that was crazy as well. But there's such a range of creative stories coming from just four widows. There must be so many more. She couldn't help looking at all elderly women differently now. Not just the Punjabi ones. My grandmother can't even write her own name. She saw me playing computer games when I was a kid once, and she thought there were actual men inside the computer with miniature guns and this tiny little city gun amok. There's no way someone with that little exposure to the world could come up with such detailed sex stories. But sex and pleasure are instinctive, right? Good, satisfying sex makes perfect sense to even the most illiterate person. You and me, we're just used to seeing it as an advanced invention because we learned about it after we learned the other basics, reading, writing, learning how to use a computer, all of that. To the widows, sex comes before all of that knowledge. I didn't hear a word of that because I'm thinking about my grandmother making a sex roti, Jason said with a grimace. Bum bread! Nikki said. Tushy toast, Jason laughed. He shook his head. I'm still in shock. What made these women feel comfortable telling you everything? Besides your obvious charm, of course. I guess they didn't think I'd judge them because I'm a modern girl. They don't tell me everything, though. She thought about Preetham's outburst about Arvinda's affair, and the way Maya's name had rankled everyone again. No explanations had been provided after the women returned from their break, and Nikki sensed it would be a long time before she could ask about it. Enough of my job. Tell me about engineering. You sounded bored just asking about engineering. Tell me about engineering, Nikki said, pumping her fists into the air. Jason's laughter boomed across the restaurant. A waiter gave them a dirty look. They didn't make it to the film in the end. They stayed on at the restaurant, ordering more wine, glancing only once at their watches, and quickly agreeing that they preferred conversation. Jason only wanted to hear about the stories. Nikki studied his face as she spoke. There was not a hint of outrage or disgust. He didn't bat an eye when she casually mentioned that she felt like she was making a feminist foray into these women's lives. The word didn't seem to chafe. Afterwards, they walked outside together. It was a cool night, and the London lights glowed on the streets. Nikki drew close to Jason, and he slipped his arms around her waist. They kissed again. "It's those raunchy stories' fault," Jason said. Nikki laughed. "No. It's you," she thought. Chapter 8. Nikki laid out the three Indian blouses and took a picture. She sent it to Mindy with a text, "Which one for me?" The stall owner, a small man with a snowy beard and a large pink turban, rapidly listed their merits. 100% cotton, very breathable. Colours don't bleed in the wash. Even the red dye doesn't come off.
His over-enthusiasm gave Nicky the impression that these were likely polyester blouses that would smell like armpits after 10 minutes of wear and make a crime scene of her other laundry if you so much as put them in the same basket. Mindy rang her back.
"Since when did you start wearing kurti tops?" she asked.
"Since I discovered a Southall clothing bazaar that sells them much cheaper than vintage shops anywhere else in London," Nicky said.
"The bluish green on the far left is the best."
"Not the maroon?"
"It's not my favourite," Mindy said. "The black one is nice too, because of the silver embroidery on the collar. Oh, could you buy me one as well?"
"Are we going to dress the same like Mum forced us to in primary school?" Mindy groaned.
"Oh, that was the worst, wasn't it? Everybody asking us if we were twins.
And then when we begged her to stop, she told us we were being ungrateful.
Some children don't have clothes at all."
The idea of naked children had sent Nicky and Mindy into hysterics. The tarp above the stall began to sag from the weight of rainfall. Nicky rubbed her hands together. At the hot chai stall next door, a queue was forming.
"What else have they got in this bazaar? Anything good?" Mindy asked.
"Some produce, a couple of masala stalls, Indian sweets," Nicky said, looking around.
"Oh, there's a woman who can dye your costume jewellery stones to match the exact shade of your outfit. There's an entire row for those jingly-dangly wedding decorations, and I also spotted a guy with a parrot who picks out your fortune from a hat."
Women roamed from stall to stall, their handbags clutched tightly under their arms. Earlier, Nicky had sidled up to a group of older ladies comparing aubergines. To her disappointment, they were only sharing a recipe. There was a lot of clattering in the background.
"Are you at work?" Nicky asked. "I'm just leaving. I'm sorting through these makeup samples that Curtie gave me for tonight. Can't decide between two eyeliners."
"It's more for you than the guy, isn't it? He probably won't notice the difference."
"I'm actually only meeting women this week," Mindy said.
"In that case, you'll need to check if the Gurdwara does lesbian weddings." The clattering stopped.
"I thought I told you about this."
"I think I'd remember."
"So, I wasn't having much luck with the temple profile. I decided to get a trial membership with SeekMate.com. It's more discreet than I expected, and you can set up these really specific filters."
"And you've determined that your husband must have a vagina?" Nicky asked, forgetting for a moment where she was. The turbaned vendor staggered as if he'd been shot.
"Oh, sorry,"
Nicky mouthed. Out of guilt, she pointed at all three blouses and gave him a thumbs up. He nodded and put them into a thin, crinkly blue plastic bag.
"On SeekMate, there's an option to meet the women of the families first before meeting the guys. You get a coffee with them, and if you hit it off, they introduce you to their brothers, nephews or sons."
That sounded like a total nightmare.
"That's so much pressure, though," Nicky said. "They'd be screening you."
Not to mention the creepiness of marrying into a family where the sisters and mothers selected mates for their men.
"It's meant to be less pressure," Mindy said. "If I got married, I'd be spending a lot of time with the women of the family anyway, so I guess I want to see if we're compatible."
"Do I get to screen guys for you then?" Nicky asked.
"Do I get to veto the ones I don't like? Or does it only work one way? Honestly, Mindy, this sounds like a terrible plan. I'd almost welcome the idea of you meeting some of the less desirable temple profile guys over meeting these SeekMate aunties first."
There was renewed clattering in the background.
"I think I'll go with the plum eyeliner," Mindy said. "It's more subtle, leaves a better impression."
It was a clear signal that Nicky's advice was not needed.
"I'll let you know how it goes."
"Good luck," Nicky muttered. They said their goodbyes and hung up. Nicky paid the vendor. She joined the chai queue, watching people scatter undercover as the downpour got heavier. She held the bag of blouses close to her chest. Mindy probably didn't know this, but Nicky had enjoyed dressing alike. She had been secretly sad when they won the war against Mum to let them be individuals. Arvinder and Preetham were not speaking. They arrived at the class 10 minutes apart and sat as opposite ends of the room. Between them, Sheena's bag, mobile phone and notebook sat on a desk, but Sheena was nowhere to be seen. Manjeet was also missing.
"We'll just wait for the others," Nicky said.
She gave Arvinder a smile. Arvinder's gaze darted away. preed them filled with the lace edge of her dupatta, folding it into tight corners. The silence reminded Nikki of her first moments with these widows. She glanced at the seat where Dharampal had sat, dutifully tracing dotted letters in her workbook.
"I'm here, I'm here,"
Sheena said breathlessly, entering the room with three women.
"This is Tanveer Kaur, Gaganjeet Kaur, and the late Jasjeet Singh's wife. We just call her Bibi. They'd like to join our class."
Nikki surveyed the women. Tanveer and Gaganjeet appeared to be in their late 60s, but Bibi was closer to Arvinda's age. They were all dressed in white.
"You're all friends of Sheena's?" Nikki asked.
The women nodded.
"Oh, good," she said. "So you know what we discuss in these classes."
The last thing she needed was another earnest English learner like Dharampal.
"I still tell most people I come to these classes to improve my English," Sheena said, "unless I really trust them."
She smiled at the new widows. From her corner, Arvinda spoke up.
"You can't rely on everyone's friends to be trustworthy, though. The people you tell might spread the word to others who can't keep a secret."
Bibi was indignant.
"I can keep a secret. She's just saying that we should be cautious,"
Sheena assured Bibi.
"You all are very welcome here. We just have to make sure we're not found out by the wrong people," Nikki said.
While crossing the Southall Broadway after her market trip, she had caught sight of three young Punjabi men patrolling the bus stop and bullishly reminding schoolgirls to go straight home. Preetam scanned the bead-lined hem of Nikki's new blouse, prepared to engage now that it wasn't just her and Arvinder.
"I like what you're wearing," she said.
"Thanks," Nikki replied. "No bra straps visible."
"Yes, very nice," Gaganjeet said.
Suddenly, her face distorted. Eyes bulging, lips drawn back to reveal her dentures, she let out a deafening shriek. In its aftermath, Nikki looked around to see that only she was rattled.
"Vai Guru," Arvinda said to bless her.
"That was a sneeze?" Nikki asked. "I'm recovering from a cold. All weekend I've been sneezing and coughing," Gaganjeet said. "It's going around," Preetam said. "I saw Manjeet at the temple early this morning, and she said she wouldn't be attending class tonight. I suppose she's unwell too. She looked a bit pale. You should take something for that cold, Gaganjeet."
"I've had some chai," Gaganjeet said. "I put extra fennel in it."
"I mean, take some medicine. Isn't Bubi Singh's pharmacy near your place?"
"It's Bobby," Sheena corrected. "He charges too much, that Bubi," Gaganjeet complained.
"Do any of our new members have a story to share?"
Nikki asked, lest the discussion digress any further. This was the other risk of adding more members. In the warm-up to telling stories, the women often traded gossip. What colour lehenga our friend's granddaughter wore to her wedding reception? What time the bus to the market arrived on Sunday when there were disruptions? Who had recently misplaced her sandals at the temple and allegedly taken another pair, starting a chain of thefts by people who had to replace their footwear?
"Nikki, wait a while now. We are just getting to know our new friends," Arvinda said. "I heard that Kulwinder is away in India. This means we can stay in the building longer."
"And make more noise," Sheena said. "I don't think we should take Kulwinder's absence as a reason to relax," Nikki said, although she felt much less tense knowing that the office down the hall was empty for the next 4 weeks.
"I'd rather not stay till late. I have to catch the train home."
"You take the train home at night by yourself? Where do you live?" Bibi asked.
"Shepherd's Bush," Nikki said.
"Where's your house, near the market or far from it?"
"It's not in Southall. I live in West London," Nikki said.
"It's safe to walk around here at night," Bibi said. "I do it all the time." "You can do it because you're an old lady," Tanveer said. "What would a man hiding in the bushes want from you?"
"I happen to have a lot of pension money," said Bibi with a huff.
"Tanveer means that you wouldn't be assaulted," Sheena said. "Younger women have to worry about that."
"Is that what happened to Kareena Kaur?" Tanveer asked.
I saw the advertisement for the new television programme about the anniversary of her murder. It happened a few years before we moved here from India. Honestly, if I'd known that this could happen to one of our girls in London, we might not have come here at all.
At the mention of Karina's name, a noticeable hush fell over the room. A moment passed in which everybody seemed to be thinking, and Nikki sensed her outsider status more acutely than usual. She cast her gaze over the group and noticed a visible tension on Sheena's face.
"I remember that. People said she was walking around alone in the park, meeting her boyfriend," Arvinda said. "And that's punishable by murder, is it?"
Sheena snapped. Arvinda looked taken aback.
"Sheena, you know I didn't mean it like that."
"I know,"
Sheena said quietly. She blinked and then gave Arvinda a small nod.
"Sorry."
Nikki had never thought Sheena could become so unnerved. She did a quick calculation. From what she could remember of the case, not that her mother would let her forget it, Karina and Sheena would probably have been around the same age when it happened. She wondered if they had known each other.
"Don't be scared by these stories, Nikki. Southall is very safe," Gaganjeet said brightly. "Why don't you live here? It's full of our people." "And Nikki's a proper modern girl," Arvinda informed the others. "You just can't tell because she's dressed like a good Punjabi girl today. Nikki, you should wear some bangles."
Nikki kept an eye on Sheena, who appeared lost in thought. Her fingers fluttered at her collarbone where she touched her necklace, as if making sure it was still there. Nikki took a step toward her and was about to ask if she was okay when Gaganjeet called her name.
"Nikki, are you looking for a husband? I might have someone for you."
"Nope," Nikki said.
"Why not? I haven't even told you about him yet."
Gaganjeet looked hurt. She blew her nose into a crumpled tissue.
"He has property," she added.
"Does anyone have a story?"
Nikki asked, stepping back to the front of the room. "We're running out of time."
"Okay, okay, no need to be impatient," Arvinda said. "She's still very bossy," she muttered to the others.
"I've come with a story," Tanvir said. She hesitated. "It's a bit unusual, though."
"Believe me, every story told in this class is unusual," Preetham said.
"I mean, this story has an element of something quite different," Tanvir said. "Quite shocking."
"Well, I couldn't possibly be more shocked than I was last lesson," Preetham said.
She threw a dirty look at Arvinder.
"Tell us your story, Tanvir," Nikki said before there was a quarrel.
"All right," Tanvir said.
Meera and Rita. Everything had a designated place in Meera's home because she liked order. She and her husband even had a schedule for their nighttime intimacies. They did it on Tuesdays and Fridays, right before going to bed. The routine never changed. She would take off her clothes and lie down on the bed, staring up and counting the tiny pockmarks on the ceiling, while her husband thrust into her, one hand gripping her right breast. There were no surprises, although Meera always made sure to say, "Oh, oh," as if opening a present she didn't really like. After his final grunt, her husband would roll off her and instantly fall asleep. It was this part of their ritual that filled Meera with mixed emotions, relief that it was over, and disgust that he did not clean himself afterwards. Wednesdays and Saturdays were for washing the sheets. The detergent Meera used for this specific task was a special floral-scented powder. She kept it on the top shelf, above the regular detergent that was used for washing the clothes of her husband, their sons, and her husband's younger brother, who also lived in this house. When the younger brother announced that he had fallen in love with a girl named Rita and that he was going to marry her, Meera's first thought was, where will Rita's place be? Everything would have to be rearranged to fit this new bride into their lives. She shared this concern with her husband,
reminded her that she was the elder. "You're allowed to give orders to her." He said this generously, as if, after years of bossing